So let's get started. We're going to discuss today something that could have halakhic implications. The halakhic implications that we're talking about are for hefsek. Hefsek hadas. Hefsek literally means a break, interruption. Hefsek hadas is the diversion of your attention. And what we're going to talk about obviously has halakhic implications, but I'm certainly in no place to pass in around here when you have tremendous Talmidei Chachamim. You have a Rav who's a Baki Bashas and Poskim, and certainly not when Rabbi Willig is here and Rabbi Hoffer is here. So I, by no means am I meaning to say that anybody should walk out and say, oh, this is how to paskin. It could be that that is a way to paskin, but it's utter actually for me the issue of Pesach when there are seniors and much more authoritative figures around. So what's the purpose of this shir? The purpose of this shir is to flesh out certain variables that pertain to Hefsek and Halakha, and to explore the topic a little bit so that we can at least crystallize, distill certain fundamentals that will be relevant to different areas of Halakha. That's what I hope to do. Okay. So the place to start, at least for our topic, is in Hilchos Brachos. But we all know you're not allowed to make a bracha that's not needed, that's superfluous. You're not allowed to say God's name in vain. And in particular, when you do recite brachos, they have to be said in context of something. It has to be either in response to something, or it has to be in anticipation of something. That's how we make brachos. What am I talking about? So if you take a look at the Rambam, at the beginning of Hilchos Brachos, this is where he really delineates the three kinds of brachos. If I were to ask you, what's the basic makor, on the rightest level, on a biblical level, what's the basic source for the fact that we make brachos? Does anybody know? Anybody want to hazard a guess? Right, the achalta v'savata v'rachta. Now, wait a second. So in other words, if you're supposed to eat, be satiated, and then make a bracha. The bracha is in response to the feeling of satiation that was generated by a maisa called achiva. Right, that is the structure. So what about making brachos before things? What about any other bracha? What about an alamita? What about a brachah? Right, what about a bracha that you make on lightning? Where did those brachas come from? As far as I know, that source that you just cited is a in the raisa that pertains specifically to one kind of bracha. Where did everything else come from? So what's the answer? Kishim Hashem Ekra, that's one possible source. How does the Rambam learn it? The Rambam says the basis for all this is Torah rabbinic. Chazal came along and he said, look, the concept of brachos is something that's really important. We have to acknowledge God, we have to constantly contemplate God and think about Him and give thanks to Him for the amazing things that He gives us and the amazing opportunities that He affords us. And so we have to make brachos. What kinds of brachos are we talking about? And how exactly do we form them? So what are we talking about? The Rambam breaks it down into three kinds of brachos. They're called, and I'll read it to you very quickly. The Rambam says, "Kishem shemavarchin al ha'anaya," just as we recite brachos on hana'a, "Kach mevarchin al kol mitzvah." You recite a bracha on every kind of mitzvah, on every single mitzvah. "Va'achar kach ya'asosa," and then afterwards, you have to do the mitzvah. Why did the Rambam say that? Why did the Rambam say, make a bracha on every single mitzvah, and then you have to do it? It's over la'asiyasa, that's true. But why does it have to be that? Why did the Rambam emphasize it? He said, you make a bracha, and then immediately you have to do it. Why? Because again, you don't just randomly make brachos on lightning, right? You don't make a bracha right now on lightning, also ma'as of reishis, or asher asakacha brachos, so lo mali olam. But you don't make those brachos now. Why not? Because they have to be in context of something. It has to be that the bracha is either in response to something, just like when you're eating the chalt of the svach of barakha, when you make berachas amazim, is in response to that eating, right? So too, whenever you make a bracha in advance of something, over la'asiyasan, as you said, it has to be in anticipation of something. So I don't make a baracha kashem akinu malachom, bore priya eitz, then go to the grocery store and pick up an apple. Why not? Why can't I do that? The answer is it has to be in anticipation of it, and it has to be reasonably proximate. The question is, though, and this is the fundamental question, that's going to basically dictate the rest of the shiur is, well, wait a second, what does it take to break those two? What does it take to break my bracha from the act on which I'm reciting it? So let's say it would be benching, right? The one that we're typically that we're accustomed to is when we talk about the chata v'savata v'rachta. So if you eat and you're satiated, and then 3 hours later you're like, oh my gosh, I forgot to make a birchas hamazon. What do you do? Are you allowed to make it anymore? Why not? You're not allowed to make a bracha anymore. Why not? Because the feeling of satiation has dissipated. The bracha is no longer relevant. It's true you had satiation 3 hours ago. That's definitely true. But the bracha has to be in response to something. Are we clear so far? Are we together? If I lose you now, let me know, and I'll try to bring you back. Are we together? Okay. So the same way that in response, a bracha has to be in response to something, the bracha also has to be in anticipation of something. I make a bracha of Lori Kriya Eitz, I have to immediately follow up by eating that apple. Just like when I say L'Halik Nirshal Chanukah, I don't make the bracha at work, then go home and light my Eretz Chanukah. Why not? Isn't it in anticipation of the act of lighting the Eretz Chanukah? It's not. We clearly divorced the bracha from the act that was connected to that bracha. The question is, what does it take to make that break? That's the question that we're talking about. Together? Okay. Yeah, that's what we're talking about, exactly. In other words, hefsek is that break. We characterize it by something called hesek hadas, by diverting your attention. What I want to figure out is, what does it take to divert your attention? What does it take to make that break? And I'll give you a couple of examples that come up literally every single day. Let's say you're at a shul event, and you wash your hands. The sinks are over here, or they're over there. The sinks a lot of places in the shul. Or you wash your hands and keep clean in a lot of places. But let's say you wash your hands by the sink, and then it takes you 10, 15 minutes to get into the social hall to eat. Are you still allowed to make that motzi? Or is that too significant of a break between the bracha on the tzedayim that's supposed to be right before motzi? Or let's say this, you sit down to make hamotzi, you realize you don't have bread on your plate, so you quickly run back to the living table, you pick up a challah, and then you go back to your seat, and now you eat it. Was that too significant of a break between the bracha and the target, the bracha and the act, or not? How are we going to quantify that? So right now we're talking about the simplest example of a break between the bracha and the maisa that's supposed to be connected to it. What? Time. Just waiting. Is wait considered something of significance that can break the bracha from the target? Yeah.
What about having it in mind?
So that's a great question. We're going to get to that. Excellent. It's an excellent question. The question was, what about if you have in mind? Let's say you make a bracha at the sink, or you make a bracha on hamotzi, and you're thinking and having in mind to get the challah, right? And it becomes pretty.
Obviously, you're making the bracha because you know you're going to have hamotzi.
That's true. So let's say you have in mind when you make the bracha, and then on your way there, a couple of friends kind of like give you some lift. 100%, exactly. But we're going to have to measure. It's 100% true. Let's just isolate the variable, though. That's exactly the point. Obviously, at a certain point, it is going to fall off, right? If I make a bracha of a motzi, and I'm still having in mind, I'm just having in mind the whole day, for 3 hours, all I'm doing is thinking about bread. At some point, presumably, it should fall off, shouldn't it? Okay, so we'll try to get to that.
There are 13 people at the Shabbos table, and everyone's
washing. Yeah, exactly. Exactly, Moblina, I'll try to get to that also. I mean, we have to get a lot of things. But let's say another example, right? So the easiest one is that you're doing something inactive, right? You're just waiting between the bracha and the maisa that's supposed to follow up. What about if you don't just wait? Let's say you make a bracha on motzi, then someone strikes up a conversation about politics with you. And I use politics just because it's usually not related to bread or motzi, but if we're talking about the price of meat or something, you know, that's not what we're talking about, right? We're just talking about whether we think the president is a good president or something, which, according to some, you shouldn't even engage in. But let's say that you start talking about politics. Is that a break? You didn't physically do it, you talked. Is that considered a hefsek between the bracha that you made and the act that's supposed to follow up? I'll give you another example. Those are mundane examples, right? Let's say I just pass with time between the bracha that I make and the target. Or let's say I do something like speech. I engage in speech about something mundane between the bracha and between the target, between the act that's supposed to follow up. What about if I say amen to somebody else's bracha? So speech, on one hand, I could have argued speech itself, maybe that's considered a break between the bracha that I made about the motzi and eating the bread. But what about if somebody else is making a motzi? I'm sitting down at Shal Shuddis, I hear somebody else say, Amotzi lachem in ha'aretz, he's going to take a bite, so I say amen. Turns out he said that bracha right in between my bracha. Can I say amen to that fellow's bracha? Are we together? What do you think? No, why not? Why is it a hefsek?
Because you are supposed to go directly to the
without any interruption. In other words, you would say no matter what the interruption is, it's automatically considered a hefsek, even if it's for something sacred, even if it's for something sacred that has to do with the task at hand, it's automatically considered a hefsek. I hear that. But anybody else? What'd you say? The task at hand is not a hefsek. So we'll get to that. Exactly. So we'll flesh this out in a little bit. I'll give you another example. How about you make a bracha on motzi, and then you sneeze. You sneeze. You sneeze, or you cough for a little while. What do you call that? Is that a hefsek? I definitely didn't intend to sneeze. Maybe I did. But let's assume I didn't. Or if I cough, just suddenly I cough for 30 seconds. Or I have allergies and I sneeze and I really need to blow my nose. Is that a hefsek? Do I have to start from scratch now? My bracha just fell off? What do you say? Onus Rachman Apache, that's true. Well, that'll get you off from Malkus and maybe Misa. But the question is, should you lichat chila make a new bracha? Right, the real question is that if somebody forces you to do something that's unintentional, how much does that register in halacha for your task at hand? Right, that's the question that we're asking. I'll give you another example where this comes up very acutely. It's on Pesach night, right? How many brachas do we make at wine? At the Seder. We make a lot of brachos, right? We say Brit Yogov not just once at the beginning of the Suda, right? But if I would have added my way, I would have said, make a bracha, Bori Priyagov at the beginning of the Seder. It's one long Seder, isn't it?
No,
so why did I mean?
Therefore, they're parts of the Seder.
Yeah, and therefore.
They're literally different.
And therefore?
Therefore, you make another bracha each time.
So what makes them different? In other words, why? I'm assuming one. That's a beautiful example. That's a beautiful example. And Rishon Zalman talks about that. The question that was raised is, what about Havdalah? For Havdalah, I make a break up often, then I make a summon, then I make the break my age, and then finally, when I get done, I actually drink the wine. Why isn't that a hefsek? How am I allowed to do that? Why isn't that a break between the rough on the wine and the follow-up act? That's what it seems to be, right? So there seems to be some sort of... What did you say? Exactly. 100%. But a minute, you should just know, a minute ago, we suggested that maybe any break, any interruption that's somewhat different, any interruption at all, maybe that shouldn't be considered. I'll give you another example. Here, even without that, the question that a lot of the posts can talk about is, let's say you're at shul, and there's 100 people around. This happens in YU, like, I shouldn't say every day, because it's not every day, obviously. It's once a week by Havdalah. There's hundreds of people around the Bima, and they're all trying to get hold of the Besamim, and you don't get hold of the Besamim until after the person drinks the wine. What do you do? You're supposed to... What? The whole thing again! Wow! That's a big machmer and a big mekel, right? You're machmer because you're making repleted, but a mekel for Hilchos Brachos, right? Yeah.
Such a long hefsek break time, the 20
car gets it. 100%.
The rabbi once said, what you should do is you should make a bracha, but then you're not facing that commission.
Right.
That's the problem.
So it could be a problem, I agree. I'll give you the example though. The example is, let's say you don't get hold of the Besamim until after the Havdalah is over. You don't get hold of the Besamim. After that Mandela is over, finally you make your way over to the beam, you fight the crowd, and you get hold of the sun. What do you do?
No problem.
No problem, but you have to bring the sun. So I'll give you a couple more examples and then we'll try to get to the meat. Let's say a person is in the middle of Shemona Esrei, right? Shemona Esrei. So let's say a person is in the middle of Shemona Esrei and they suddenly have to go to the bathroom. They have to use the restroom. So they obviously you're not allowed to daven if the person needs to use the restroom. So they leave. They go and use the restroom. What do they do now? Do they have to start from scratch? Do they pick up where they left off? Do they start from the beginning of that paragraph? What do you do? On the one hand, you're right. It's something that's definitely not quite related to Shemona Esrei, right? On the other hand, as you said before, I mean, onus rachmana patri, but not really onus rachmana patri, right? It's some sort of an onus, right? It's some sort of thing beyond your control. What do you do? Another example, let's say a person falls asleep during Shemona Esrei, right? or they fall asleep during Kriya Shema. It doesn't have to be dafka that your person's standing up and he's somehow falling asleep or sitting down for some reason. Maybe he's davening in the car. What do you do in that case? I'll give you another example. You make a bracha on the talis, right? What happens? You make a bracha on the talis that's supposed to be followed up by the act of adorning yourself with a talis. Let's say it falls off. So if you didn't intend to take it off, it falls off. So now you want to put it back on. You make a bracha?
Yes.
So we got a machlokas achronim here. So whereas one person is suggesting, if you take it off, then you don't make a new bracha. But if it falls off, then you do make a new bracha. Interesting. Does everyone agree with that? No? The Jews never agree. Okay. It doesn't make a difference. But in other words, it's that question. Sorry, what did you say?
If it's not a problem, it's not intentionally.
Yeah.
You don't have to make it. It's intentionally. Take it off. Then you make a promise.
Why?
It's a problem.
Let me ask you a question. Let's say a person is a middle school teacher. They're planning on coming back after the bathroom. They're going to use the restroom to come back. Does that help? I mean, they just have in mind that they're coming back afterwards. And what does it mean? Is that an X? At some point,
if it's something to me, he continues anyway.
So we'll get there. That's just a shame. Yeah. Same thing for tefillin, by the way. Person takes off their tefillin to go to the bathroom. So now when they put it back on, what do? New bracha or no new bracha? No new bracha. That's what we're asking? Is there unanimity among all the achronim? Okay. I'll give you, let's say, two or three more examples. This is a classic example that comes up. Everyone, you make a Berachas HaTorah, right? You're not allowed to start learning until you make a Berachas HaTorah, right? You make the Berachas HaTorah at the beginning of the morning. You go to the bathroom. You have breakfast. What about after lunch, you sit down to learn? New bracha or no new bracha? No new bracha. That's just what we do. Why?
In the morning, you always... After you made the promise in the dhamma, you have already Torah and school in there. That's why you have the Torah, as you say.
Yeah, and therefore?
So you're learning something after the bracha.
Okay, so now so let's say now I learn 3 hours later. Do I have to make a new bracha? Why not?
We have this question many times.
Yeah, I know. It's a good question.
So
your kavanah is for the whole day. So what about my kavanah? Again, I'll go back to the Shemona Esrei question. I'm davening Shemona Esrei, and I need to go to the bathroom. I'm having in mind to come back, right? So with Berachas HaTorah, I go to the bathroom, and I'm having in mind to come back. No? So does that work? Is that different or the same than Shemona Esrei? It's different.
You have to.
Asher Yatzar, that's also a great question. And maybe Asher Yatzar should or shouldn't be a hefzik itself. Right. I don't know if we're, I mean, I feel like the time is short. We're going to run a little low. So I'll try to get to, where does the sugya really start? So when I first came to YU, I learned, has anyone here ever heard of Rabbi Joseph Weiss? Rabbi Joseph Weiss, so when I first came to the Smicha program, Rabbi Joseph Weiss, he taught Yerodir, he was a Talmud of Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. He taught Yerodir for like 60 years in Ritz. So he knew a little bit about Basra Kalav and Aruvas, and he also knew Shchita. So he was a stickler for Shchita. I'm a millennial, I'm a 21st century kid, but we're still learning Hilcha Shchita, Baruch Hashem. So there are a lot of very geshmak sugyas that come up in Hilcha Shchita. You're probably discovering them now, I guess. Any Dafyomi people here? There's supposed to be like a very large Dafyomi that happens here. So if you look in Chulin, this is one of the major starting points for this whole sugya, for this whole discussion, is the Gemara in the Gemara in Chulin. What am I talking about? I'll tell you what I'm talking about. Anytime you shech a regular run-of-the-mill cow or sheep, you just shech it, make a bracha on the shechita, right? You do the shechita, and then you clean everything off, and you can eat the meat eventually, as long as you make sure that everything else is fine. What about if it's poultry? What about if it's chicken or venison? A wild animal or a chicken. So then the halacha is that after the shechita, there's blood that ends up on the floor. I have to do what's called kisur adam. I have to cover over that blood. Right? Here's the question. I'm a shechter. I shecht for the whole town. I have hundreds of chickens that are lined up for me to shecht. Right now, I have to do kisur adam. So one question in the Gemara is, well, can I do kisur adam on all of them at one time? Can I just shecht one after the other? Then when I'm done, I'll do all of the cleanup work. I'll do kisur adam, that's a separate mitzvah with a separate bracha. Can I just do one kisur adam for all of them, or do I have to do independent, individual kisur adams? That's one question. But I'll tell you the thing that everybody agrees to. This is what the Gemara in Chulin says. Gemara in Chulin says that everybody agrees that if you shecht, and then you do kisur adam, and then you shecht again, do I have to make a new bracha of al hashchita? What do you say? What do you think? I did a shechita, I made a bracha al shechita, I shecht the bird. Now there's blood, I cover it over, I do the kisur adam, which requires its own bracha. Then after I do the kisur adam, I then shecht another bird. Do I have to make a new bracha al shechita, or did the first al shechita count? There are two separate mitzvahs. There's a mitzvah of shechita, and there's a mitzvah of kisur adam. What do I do? New bracha on shechita, or old bracha counts? So exactly. That's exactly what the Amoraim said. The Amoraim tell us that the pshat, at least according to Rabbi Yehuda, is that according to Rabbi Yehuda, the halacha is one bracha shechita at the beginning, even though you're breaking up the shechitas with kisei hadam. So the Gemara says, I don't get it. We know that Rav is the first generation Amora. He has a couple of Talmidim who are coming and they're having a suda together. The two Talmidim come together, they have a Suda, and they say, you know what, okay, I think we're ready to bench. They say, let's bring out the Kol Shel Bracha, we're going to have a cup of wine, we're going to bench. And then they have second thoughts. And they say, you know what, actually, I think we're actually interested in continuing the Suda, let's have a little bit more wine instead of using this cup for wine to bench them. Do you think you can do Bracha for if you have gotten out of that wine or not? So one of the Talmidim of Rav said, actually, Rav Paskin, you have to make a new bracha right now. So the Gemara says, I don't get it. Once you divert your attention, you start engaging in some other activity, that's it. The first mitzvah is over. Right? So why is it any different for kisur adam for shechita? Again, kisur adam does not break up the shechita. Right? But when it comes to when I decide to take out the kosher bracha to make berachas hamazon, all of a sudden, that does. Why? Are we together so far? Everyone with me? But why isn't the kisur adam considered a hesach hadas? So here's the first variable. Here's the first criterion that the Gemara gives us. The Gemara says, it depends if you can do both activities simultaneously. When it comes to kosher bracha, berachas hamazon, can you drink wine, continuing the suda, and make berachas hamazon at the same time? Absolutely not. They're incompatible activities. When it comes to kisur adam, though, says the Gemara, you could easily do kisur adam with one hand and do shechita with another hand. Because you could, in theory, do both activities simultaneously, the kisur adam is not a hefsek. So let me just crystallize that. What I mean now is, is that if the activity that I now divert my attention to is an activity that is incompatible with my first activity, then that's a hefsek. I would have to start from scratch. But if the second activity I'm engaging in is not incompatible, that can be done simultaneously, that's not considered to be a hefsek. Are we together right now? Okay. So hang on a second. So now the Rebbe Yomtiv, quoted by the Baalei Tosfos. If you take a look, Rebbe Yomtiv, when he's quoted by Tosfos, the Rebbe Yomtiv is the Rivan's son. The Rivan was Rashi's son-in-law. So that's what we're talking about right now. Rashi's son-in-law had a son. That son's name is Rebbe Yomtiv. He says the following sentence. So he says, let's say you start davening. Let's say you're in the middle of a suda, excuse me. You're eating dinner. All of a sudden you look at your watch. You say, oh my gosh, it's time to daven mincha. What do you do? So you quickly run out, you daven mincha, you want to catch mincha, you come back. Now, you have to start the meal from scratch, make a birchas hamazon on what you did before, wash and fill sedayim, start again, or not. So what do we say? So Rabbeinu Yomtiv says, well, let's take a look at this Gemara. The Gemara says, what's the defining characteristic of a hefsek? If the two activities are incompatible, can you daven mincha at the same time that you're eating a suda? You can. That's horrible. No way. Not in Rabbeinu Yomtiv's yeshiva. So Rabbeinu Yomtiv says you can't daven at the same time as eating, and therefore, when you go to daven, that's a hefsek. When you get back, start from scratch. Berachas Muslim, what you did so far, make a netilas sedayim, and make a moti again. The Baalei Tosfos say back to that, that's absurd. What would happen if you were in the middle of a suda and all of a sudden you hear thunder? Don't you make a bracha? Of course you make a bracha. You drop what you're doing, make a bracha. You're going to tell me that after you hear the lightning, after you hear the thunder, you make the bracha. Now you start the suda from scratch? That's crazy. So the Baalei Tosfos add in one more variable. They add in one more criterion. What is it? They say it's not just that the two activities have to be incompatible. They have to be incompatible and the activity that you are now engaging in terminates the first activity. So therefore, when I decide to bench, I actively terminated, I officially, on the books, terminated my first activity. When I engage in kisei adam, I'm not necessarily terminating the first activity. Maybe I am. Officially, it's officially terminating the activity, but it happens to be that one of the two variables is still present. They're not incompatible. They can still be done at the same time. What about davening? When I leave my meal in order to go daven, so what do we call that? Is that an official termination of the suda? Or no, I was just stuck. I didn't realize that it's milchah time now, and I run out. I'm going to come back now. In fact, my whole family is staying right here. What do we do? So that's why the Baalei Tosfos say back to Rabbeinu Yomtiv, they said that's not true. You need two factors. There are two criteria in order to make a bona fide, genuine hefsek. What are the two? Number one, it has to be that the two activities are incompatible. Number two, it has to be, what? It has to be that I officially terminated the first activity. Are we together so far? Then are we? Okay. So there are a couple of obvious applications. We're not going to get to all of them. I want to give a couple of obvious applications, and then we'll try to close. Let's your talus. You take off your talus to go to the bathroom. Why are you taking your talus off to go to the bathroom? Is going to the bathroom an incompatible activity with wearing a talus? It's not incompatible. You just don't want to take it in there because it might get dirty. But it's not incompatible. So we're missing one of the two factors for hefsek. Right? That's one example. Another example is, let's say you're at the suda, right? And the Baalei Tosfos talk about this. They say, let's say you start schmoozing. You're schmoozing in the middle of the suda. What would be the halacha? So the Baalei Tosfos is actually saying, we don't know. Because on the one hand, schmoozing, you might have argued, is what? Schmoozing is automatically a hefsek because you made a birchas hamotzi. Schmoozing is not part of the hamotzi. The Baalei Tosfos is actually saying, we don't know what to do in this case. But if you were a shaita and you said to someone, in between the shittas, please pass me that knife, would that be a hefsek?
No.
That's not a hefsek because that's relevant to the maaser that you're engaged in. So same thing with salt, exactly. If you're at the table and you ask someone to pass the salt, It's the same idea. You're not supposed to, it's a really bad idea if there are kids around, they'll pick up the wrong messages, but in theory, right, it wouldn't be a hefzer because it's relevant to what you're doing. Okay, I want to close with a quick maisa. We know that we have to daven mincha. So are there any people who have children or grandchildren in this room?
Yeah.
Anybody? There's only four.
Why?
Okay. Have you ever been in a situation where you go to their houses and there's something that they're doing that you don't 100% agree with? Has that ever happened?
What?
I'm one of nine. I've seen it happen hundreds of times. Has that ever happened where you go to their house and you don't 100% agree with everything going on there? Okay. It could be the bedtime routine, it could be table manners, it could be the way that they interact with their kids. So I'll tell you my son. The maisa is, there was one time a grandmother, she comes to her children's houses, and her daughter was educated, she went to seminary, she came back home, she pursued a career, she's a lawyer, she's coming home, she's tired after the long day, and she just wants some wine because she has five kids. And so, she's sitting there putting together dinner, and her children are just antsy, they're all excited, they want to share the news of the day, and their mother is not there. She's cooking dinner, she's running around, she's choosing with friends, she just wants to unwind. And rightfully so, she's very tired at the end of a very long day. But the grandmother walks in and she sees her daughter not giving the children the attention that they need, because she's seen what happens when the children get the message from their mother that they're not really interested in the exciting news that they're being open to school. But she doesn't know what to say. She doesn't know what to say. She's just looking at the children, and she's seeing how the excitement on their faces is dissipating. Every time they approach their mother to help them with their homework, to share exciting news, she's engaged in something else. She's watching TV, she's on her iPhone, and that's the biggest epidemic right now. And she's not really there, but she doesn't know what to do. And ultimately, in this story, the children felt, look, we're not loved, we're not wanted. Why? Why do we need this? And ultimately, the grandmother's concerned. Obviously, this girl's mother's concerned. Why is she concerned? Because ultimately, who's the one who loses out? The person who loses out is her daughter. Because she's not going to have children. There's a very interesting thing. The message of Hefsek is that you can be present. You can be physically present. You can be engaging in Torah and the mitzvos. But your mind isn't there. Your attention is totally, totally diverted. It could be a game. It could be the news. It could be politics. It could be things that are very much on your mind. They're very relevant. But it's very easy to be physically present without being mentally present.
No, I have them anyway.
Where you're being mafsik, where you're being mesiach das, you're diverting your attention. In the same way that those children, they pick up that their mother's not really interested in what they have to say, it's the same thing with God. We're here for a week of learning. We're here for a week of tefillah, of tuning our tefillahs. And thank you so much for everybody for having us. The message of Hefsek is that if you want to be present, it's not enough to be physically present. It's not enough to be physically engaged. If you're engaging in something else, or if your mind is elsewhere, it could be you're physically present. But if you're not mentally present, is that a Hefsek? Are you really devoted to the relationship or not? Thank you so much, everybody. Okay.
Suppose you're flinching.